Stop. Pause the video. Okay, don't pause it yet. Pause it when I tell you to. This episode is about a quote. A pretty well-known quote. You'll probably recognize it when I say it. So, after I say the quote, I want you to pause the video, think about where you've heard that quote before, and leave a comment down there letting me know where it's from. Then I'll play the intro, and I'll explain where the quote is really from. And if you got it, you win a free plastic durian, complete with the mustache. No Googling, this here is an honor system. Ready? Here's the quote. So one character says, "What does it do?" And then another character responds, "That's the beauty of it. It doesn't do anything." There you go. Once again, the quote is, "What does it do? That's the beauty of it. It doesn't do anything." You don't need to put in any identifying information other than the show, movie, or book you think the quote is from, and you cannot say it's from the song The Machine by Lemon Demon. The quote is referenced in the song, but it's not the quote's origin. I'm your host, Tor Parsons, this is my co-host, Jollibee the Durian, and welcome to Tor's Cabinet of Curiosities. All right. I can't wait to see what people say for this one. Back when I hosted Tor's Cabinet on the radio in my college, I loved asking people about this quote. Phineas and Ferb was probably the most common answer I got. I've had some people say The Good Place, a lot of people say Willy Wonka, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is also pretty common. Someone once said it was from the Coen Brothers movie The Hudsucker Proxy, and even named the specific scene where she thought it was said, but even that's wrong. The quote, "What does it do? That's the beauty of it. It doesn't do anything," does not appear anywhere in any of those sources. Want to know the real origin of the quote? Here you go.
Certainly. Yes, I always take this with me when I travel. At home, I have much bigger one.
What is it?
Well, it's my therapy. I'm still perfecting it.
What does it do?
Do?
Yeah, what's it for?
Well, nothing. I mean, that's the beauty of it. No, every machine in the world is selling, but not mine.
Did you catch it? Here it is again.
What does it do?
Do?
Yeah, what's it for?
Well, nothing. I mean, that's the beauty of it.
If you're not feeling a flash of recognition, if you're not thinking, oh, of course that's where that's from, I don't blame you. This clip is from the long-forgotten 60s cop show, Burke's Law, described on IMDb with the synopsis, "A millionaire captain of the Los Angeles Police Homicide Division, is driven to the crime scenes in his 1962 Rolls-Royce by his loyal chauffeur." From what I've seen of this show, it's a bigger cliché storm than Fox Force 5. Every episode title uses the template, "Who killed blank?" Example titles include, "Who killed the surf broad?" "Who killed Mr. Cartwheel?" "Who killed the richest man in the world?" "Who killed Mr. What's-His-Name?" And "Who killed everybody?" Tag yourself. The particular clip I played is from the second season episode, "Who Killed 7-Eleven?" Yes, that's really what it's called. And it involves Amos Burke, the titular millionaire police captain, questioning a strange man who carries around a giant machine everywhere he goes. It makes even less sense in context. Now if you're thinking, but Tor, this can't be where the quote comes from. There's no way this memorable quote is from an unmemorable 60s cop show. You've got a point. Burke's Law, while it got okay ratings at the time and launched the career of heavyweight TV producer Aaron Spelling, didn't leave much of a legacy. The show's broadcaster, ABC, unceremoniously pulled the plug in 1966, halfway through its third season, in which Amos Burke had been abruptly retooled as a secret agent rather than a police detective to capitalize on James Bond mania. Burke's Law has never been rerun since then, does not appear on any major streaming services, and only the first season was ever released on DVD. It never amassed a cult following or received much recognition, positive or negative, from critics. Mystery Scene magazine described Burke's Law as so lighthearted it nearly floated away. I'd be hard-pressed to find a more obscure show produced for multiple seasons by a major network. So clearly, this can't be what people are remembering when they remember that's the beauty of it, it doesn't do anything, as a catchphrase. It's also, let's hear it again.
What does it do?
Do?
What's it for?
Well, nothing. I mean, that's the beauty of it.
Not word for word what people are remembering. Clearly, there must be another place this quote has appeared, right? Maybe in a form closer to the simple question and answer dialogue that sounds so familiar? Well, the good news is that, yes, there is. Check this out.
What is it?
It's a butterfly.
What does it do?
Doesn't do anything. That's the beauty of it. You nail them to your house, to your mailbox, makes it distinctive. The bad news is that the source of this clip is probably even more obscure than Burke's Law. It's from the 1987 comic play Apocalyptic Butterflies by Wendy McLeod, which is so little known that I could only find one video online of the play being performed, and it didn't include the part that had this quote in it. I think this clip of me saying it to myself, Vine style, is the only video on the internet of this dialogue from Apocalyptic Butterflies being performed. As far as I know, Apocalyptic Butterflies has been put on before, but only a few times, and never by any major theater company. So it's even less likely to have been the source of this perplexingly familiar quote. Now here's the stinger. This quote has been getting attention online for nearly 20 years. All this time, the only two places internet users have found this quote actually being used, other than in a deliberate reference to the mystery, are Burke's Law and Apocalyptic Butterflies. At this point, the answer to where is this quote from becomes obvious. That's the beauty of it. It's not from anything. So why do so many people think it sounds so familiar? The search for the true origin of this quote dates back to at least 2003, when the quote was posted on the Straight Dope messaging board, a site dedicated to debunking urban legends and common misconceptions. As usual, whenever this quote is brought up, dozens of commenters said it sounded familiar, but nobody could find the quote in the place they remembered it. Discussion spread to the IMDb, Snopes, and WikiQuote message boards, where a moderator implied that the quote had already been searched for in vain, saying, "You're asking one of the great mysteries of quoteology." So, among people who archive quotes, this line already had some level of infamy. Over the next few years, the Burke's Law and Apocalyptic Butterfly sources were unearthed from the depths of the internet, but most people recognized that neither of these were a real solution to the mystery. One thing discovered in the course of the search was that a lot of the movies and shows people tend to name as sources really do include similar quotes. Quotes that have the same feel as, "That's the beauty of it, it doesn't do anything," aren't that rare. There are quotes that conceivably could be misremembered as our quote in The Big Lebowski.
Walter, your plan is so fucking simple and people don't fucking understand it. That's the beauty of it.
Bruce Almighty.
And you can't mess with free will.
Uh-huh. Can I ask why?
Yes, you can. That's the beauty of it.
The Simpsons episode Much Apu About Nothing.
How does it work?
Doesn't work.
Another Simpsons episode, Blood Feud.
Marge, what does it do?
Doesn't do anything.
Marge, really, what does it do?
Whatever it does, it's doing it now.
And the Tim Burton Willy Wonka movie. Just for fun, I went looking for a similar quote in the most random source I could think of, a talk show hosted by an old friend of mine at the college I went to. I found one.
How does anything get done?
It doesn't.
Okay, maybe that last one was a bit of a stretch, but it's interesting how many quotes there are out there that are so close to what we're remembering and yet so far, isn't it? And before you ask, no, none of those are likely to have been the source either. Most of these were dug up by online sleuths searching for the origin of what does it do, and as far as I know, nobody had an epiphany moment thinking, oh, this is definitely what I'm remembering, upon hearing any of these quotes. They're all from fairly well-known sources, and some of them are very close. The Simpsons Blood Feud one is close in terms of wording, and the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory one is close in terms of meaning. But none of them convey the original line's meaning, which is that the very uselessness of the thing being asked about is what makes it beautiful. It exists specifically to not do anything. I'd say that's the part that makes the line so memorable. Besides, plenty of people who have never seen any of these movies or episodes nonetheless think that's the beauty of it, it doesn't do anything, it sounds familiar. I had never watched any of these the first time I heard the quote, and it sounded familiar to me. I thought it was from Wallace and Gromit. It's not there either. If you look this up on YouTube, you'll find a clip that some people are claiming to be the origin of the quote. It's a video just 4 seconds long, with absolutely no context, of two men sitting face to face in a generic looking office. In the corner, there's an NBC watermark, suggesting it was broadcast by that network, but there's no indication of what show it's from. One man says to the other,
"Well, that's the beauty of it, Jack. We don't do anything."
Now that sounds like the quote everyone remembers, right? That's close enough to "it doesn't do anything" that people could be misremembering it, right? Especially in connection with one of the quotes I just played, right? Not so fast. Originally, I thought that this clip presented a mini mystery within our mystery. Where is it from? Why is this the only evidence of its existence? If the quote, or at least one very similar to it, is from a show big enough to have been broadcast on NBC, why was it so hard to find for all this time? None of these answers were forthcoming. I tried messaging the original poster of the YouTube video, but didn't get a reply. I entered permutations of the dialogue in this clip to sites that archive TV scripts, and eventually I found a match. Turns out, this clip is taken from an episode of 30 Rock, which I could have discovered a lot sooner if I had ever seen the show, and it's undergone some creative editing. Someone messed with that clip to position themselves as the hero who found the most mysterious quote on the internet. It's not the only promising false lead that's come up in this search either. As the line has made the rounds on the internet as the fabled quote that everyone remembers but nobody can find, it's wormed its way into popular culture, earning references not just in the Lemon Demon song The Machine, which I referenced at the start of this episode, but also in a 2009 episode of Phineas and Ferb.
And now, it's fresh, it's new, it's incredibly hip, soon to be the biggest hit of the new toy season, Harry! The platypus.
What does it do?
That's the beauty part. It does absolutely nothing.
Today, you'll find people claiming that the quote is from that Phineas and Ferb episode, or that it's from the Lemon Demon song, when really the search for what does it do predated and inspired both of them. This kind of muddies the waters. Now, people who say they remember the quote from somewhere might really remember it, from Phineas and Ferb, or the Lemon Demon song, or one of the other places the mystery has been referenced. A few people have described the search for what does it do as a Mandela effect. You know, one of those cultural pseudo-mysteries where large groups of people misremember something. Some of the people who are more into this sort of thing blame constant shifts between multiple, almost identical realities, which I guess makes more sense to them than, I don't know, realizing your memory isn't perfect. Most of the best-known Mandela effects aren't all that mysterious. People tend to remember the Berenstain Bears as the Berenstein Bears because Berenstein is a relatively well-recognized name. It sounds a lot like Leonard Bernstein, for instance. and plenty of names end in steen, whereas not a lot of names end in stain. That show that your mom liked is called Sex and the City, not Sex in the City, but it makes sense that people would remember it as Sex in the City, because that phrasing just makes more sense. And it sounds almost exactly like Sex and the City if you say it fast enough. Chartreuse is a greenish-yellow color, and puce is a pinkish-purple. Well, people often remember it the other way around, but this is probably because chartreuse sounds all pretty and French, while puce sounds like it should be the color of puke. The real story behind the Mandela effect is that people have a tendency to remember the world making more sense than it actually does. What does it do? Occupies a different place. In every Mandela effect, there's an answer that feels correct. It's not like people remember the Berenstain Bears being called 50 different mutually exclusive things. No, everyone remembers them being called the Berenstain Bears. What does it do isn't like that. It doesn't have a clearly defined source that people remember it from. Rather, everyone seems to remember it being from somewhere different. Not even the really out there theory about the Mandela effect, the one that puts it down to people slipping between universes, could explain this. Playing devil's advocate for a second and suggesting that maybe there really is another universe out there where the Berenstain Bears are called the Berenstain Bears, we're left to argue that there is also a universe out there where that's the beauty of it, it doesn't do anything, comes from Willy Wonka. And one where it comes from The Simpsons. And one where it comes from Wallace and Gromit, and one where it comes from The Good Place, and dozens upon dozens of other universes where it comes from every other source that people remember as the quote's origin. We just happen to be stuck in the universe where it's from an unmemorable 60s cop show and an even less memorable 80s absurdist play. In that case, what does it do? Would be a constant between universes. It's always there, but it's never in the same place twice. It would be a bit like the following passage in a book often misidentified as the source of our quote, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. In the second book in the series, The Restaurant at the End of the Universe, the narrator notes that it is a curious fact, and one to which no one knows quite how much importance to attach, that something like 85% of all known worlds in the galaxy, be they primitive or highly advanced, have invented a drink called Ginantonics, or Ginantonics, or Ginondonics, or any one of a thousand or more variations on the same phonetic theme. The drinks themselves are not the same, and vary between the Savolvian Chinantonigs, which is ordinary water served at slightly above room temperature, and the Gagrakakan Chinanthonix, which kills cows at 100 paces. And in fact, the one common factor between all of them, beyond the fact that the names sound the same, is that they were all invented and named before the worlds concerned made contact with any other worlds. And while that's all fun to speculate about, ultimately, it leaves us no closer to discovering why this seemingly non-existent quote is so annoyingly familiar. The orthodox theory is, of course, that there really is a source for it, somewhere out there, that for some reason the internet just hasn't found yet. For a while, I thought this wasn't possible. What could possibly hide from the collective hive mind of the internet for so long? But a Reddit user made a point in favor of this theory that struck a chord with me. It involved this song.
Don't hold you.
This catchy 80s song was allegedly taped off a German radio station in 1986 and added to someone's mixtape. Years later, as the internet gradually became larger and more accessible, the mixtape owner posted all the songs from the mix online, hoping to identify the title and artist for each one. Each song was quickly identified, except for the one I just played, which went unsolved for years. After a while, it gained attention from all over the internet as a mystery song that nobody could find. The original, most mysterious song on the internet. It was nicknamed Stay the second time around from the lyrics in the chorus. Dozens of obscure songs with that title, or a similar one, were dug up on Discogs and at record stores, and none of them were the right song. By the 2010s, the trail had gone cold, and a prevailing theory developed that the song was a hoax, created by some band in the early 2000s as an attempt at sounding like a lost 80s artist. Until September 2013, when the song was played on a Swedish radio station, introduced as something like The Song the Internet Can't Find, and immediately thousands of Swedes recognized it as On the Roof by Swedish 80s pop star Johan Lindell. It didn't have Stay or The Second Time Around in the title, and it wasn't that obscure. It was on Spotify all along, for instance. It could have been found a lot sooner if people had broadened their search terms. So maybe the story of What Does It Do is something similar. Maybe there is a clear source for the quote that we're all forgetting, which will make sense to all of us once it's found, and for the moment we're all just looking in the wrong place. Wendy McLeod, the playwright behind Apocalyptic Butterflies, thinks this is the case. She wasn't aware that a tossed-off line in one of her earliest plays turned out to be a quote that the whole internet would end up searching for, and didn't even recognize the line as her own quote when people began to contact her about it. She believes that Apocalyptic Butterflies did play a role in originating the quote, but an indirect one. The first time Apocalyptic Butterflies was performed, she says, was at the Yale Drama School in 1987, where she was graduating. Many of her classmates went on to have jobs writing for TV and movies, and she suspects that one of them quoted her play in something they wrote, exposing it to a wider audience. It's a watertight theory, except that there remains no evidence that it has ever appeared in a widely watched movie or show. While the analogy to the song On the Roof tipped me towards thinking it's a little more likely the true source for the quote is still out there, I don't believe it's plausible. I really don't. The fact that online sleuths have already found the quote in Burke's Law and Apocalyptic Butterflies makes me think that it can't be in anything better known. If you're diving that deep, you'd have found it by now if it were closer to the surface. An interesting theory put forward in one of the first ever threads on this topic is the suggestion by a Straight Dope Forums user that it appeared on a widely listened radio broadcast. They suspect that in some major American city, at some point in the 90s or 2000s, a radio DJ sampled the clip from Burke's Law, or maybe Apocalyptic Butterflies, though that's even more obscure, and made it their catchphrase. This theory ticks a lot of the boxes. It's mainstream enough to have had lots of listeners and become well-known in the world at large, but ephemeral enough to be almost unfindable today. Plenty of large radio stations don't archive their broadcasts, and people who record songs off the radio usually take out the DJ chatter between songs. But I feel that if What Does It Do had been popularized on a major radio station, someone would remember that today. There would be someone, somewhere, who remembers hearing it being said on a particular station by a particular DJ, and other people would notice that comment, agree that that sounds familiar, and at some point, an internet sleuth searching for the source of the quote would contact that DJ. Besides, if it were on a radio station, the phenomenon of everybody remembering the quote would be localized to a particular city, state, or region of the country at the largest. Instead, the mystery of What Does It Do spans the entire English-speaking world. I'm far more likely to believe it was a hoax all along, a sociolinguistic phenomenon discovered by some nameless straight dope forum user in the early 2000s, who realized that if you put two phrases together that are separately used in movies pretty often, that's the beauty of it, and it doesn't do anything, people would think it's a famous quote when it's not. The existence of a lot of similar quotes points in that direction, as does the discovery of the line appearing almost verbatim in Burke's Law and Apocalyptic Butterflies. It's just a logical pairing of lines that people assume has to be out there somewhere. And it is out there somewhere, in Burke's Law and Apocalyptic Butterflies. It's just not in anything widely watched. The somewhat spookier variation on this theory, and the theory I might actually put the most weight on, is that what does it do indeed does not exist outside of Burke's Law and Apocalyptic Butterflies, but it isn't a hoax, because nobody created it. Rather, there are just things in this world that seem like they should exist. In that respect, I would compare what does it do to the cool S. You remember the cool S, right? You draw three vertical lines, and then three vertical lines a little below that, you connect them, cap off the ends, and you've got a really cool S that you can draw all over your sneakers or your middle school notebooks. It's a universal phenomenon. Personally, I remember all my classmates being obsessed with the cool S when I was in fourth grade in Oregon. Then, when my family moved to France, before my fifth grade year, all my classmates were obsessed with the cool S there, too. Well, just like what does it do, the cool S has no clear origin. People tend to think that it's an early logo for Superman, or that it's from the skatewear brand Stussy, or that it was part of the logo for a metal band, but it's not any of those. The YouTuber Lemino did a fantastic video where he took a deep dive into the origins of the cool S, and what he eventually found was that the first conclusive documentation of it was in a photo of graffiti in Los Angeles, probably from the late 60s, though he also found a book of ornamented letters from all the way back in 1890 that included a similar S, and there's a symbol like it in the Renaissance painting The Ambassadors by Hans Holbein, too, from 1533. In other words, the true origin of the cool S is that it's from everywhere and nowhere. People seem to have come up with it multiple times across history because it's, well, cool. It strikes the right balance between being a simple, logical symbol and being interesting and distinctive. Another symbol like that, to take this episode in a totally different direction, is the swastika. Before Hitler permanently gave the symbol a bad name, swastikas had appeared all over history, in many different cultures, with many different meanings, because if you remove it from its present-day baggage, you have to admit it's an engaging symbol. Simple, yet distinctive. So, what if what does it do is the quote version of the swastika, or perhaps the quote version of the cool S? It's made out of common, recognizable parts, which go together well enough that it's so catchy it doesn't need to have a clear origin for people to be spreading it around. It's a true meme, using the original definition of the word that Richard Dawkins coined as an analogy to genetics. A meme is a gene, except in culture rather than biology. Memes are the units that culture is built out of, and often they don't have clear origins. Like genes, they mutate randomly. Most mutations aren't very successful, but if they're memorable enough, they can spread like wildfire, whether or not there's someone deliberately spreading them around. So, let's return to the question that started it all. What does it do? Everything. That's the beauty of it.
Man and Grey will get you now. You've got to hide or take the blame. Accusing finger points at you.